Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Creation Podcast, the show where we discuss the science that confirms scripture. I'm your host, Trey, and I have with me once again ICR's geneticist, Dr. Jeff Tompkins. Thank you for being here.
It's great to be here again.
Yes. And I'm excited to discuss the second part of this kind of two-part series that we're doing on supposed human ancestors. If you haven't seen the first one, it's not like you have to see the first one to understand this one, but we'll link that anyway. So today we are talking about Homo naledi. Now, this is a more recent discovery, we'll say, 2015, not that long ago.
Right.
Discovered by a man named Lee Berger, and it's supposed to be a nearly human ancestor. But from my understanding, there's a lot of contention around this find, no matter which circles you're looking in, evolutionary, creationist, et cetera. I'd like to kind of talk about where this was found and the story kind of leading up to it. A former student mysteriously shows up at Lee Berger's door and says, "Hey, there's some caves in South Africa. Let's go explore. I promise you it'll be worth your while." At least this is the story, as well as I understand it. There's some pictures taken by some amateur cave explorers of this like cave room that's just full of fossils. Lee Berger is like, "Those aren't human." Awesome. You know, I believe that those are not human fossils.
That's what he said initially. And then, but of course, he then pursued this lead and went into the cave. Well, first of all, let me say Lee Berger was a professor at a university in South Africa.
Right.
You know, human evolution was his specialty, but he actually entered this whole discovery with kind of a controversial image to begin with, because he was the guy that discovered Australopithecus sediba, which now is largely believed to be a mix of human and ape bones. Yeah. He already kind of had this cloud hanging over him because of the controversy surrounding Australopithecus sediba. And so that's how he kind of entered this fray, if you want to put it that way. So yes, this former student comes in and gives Berger this lead on a cave, and it's called the Rising Star Cave System. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's a very popular system in South Africa for cavers. There's actually a lot of people around the world that, as a hobby, they love, you know, going into caves.
Crazy people.
Probably so.
You won't catch me doing that. No.
Yeah, and actually, this particular cave system was heavily, you know, explored already.
Okay.
And in fact, the particular cave chambers that Lee Berger explored, especially the lowest chamber in this one system, had already been visited by who knows how many people before. There was evidence that people not only had been in there, but had been digging around in there. And so it wasn't a pristine situation necessarily.
So we've got this Rising Star cave system. I have... there are at least two chambers that he entered in. One's called the Dragon's Back Chamber.
Right. And well, it's interesting because both these chambers were kind of difficult to get into. Okay. So you could get into the entrance of the cave fairly easily. But to get into the first chamber called the Dragon's Back, they had a very narrow place that was only 10 inches tall. So you had to literally get on your stomach like this.
I'm out.
And so Lee Berger was able to squeeze through that and get into the first chamber, the Dragon's Back Chamber.
Okay.
But they call that, actually, that narrow place Superman's Crawl, because you're...
Gotcha. Got your arms out.
You're like Superman, flying through the air or whatever. So that, you could, most people could get into that chamber, although it was, you know, it was still difficult. It was difficult for Lee Berger because he wasn't, you know, a small person. So,
right.
But there was a second chamber in which actually had a chute that went down into it, and it was very narrow and tight. So Lee Berger actually had to hire a team of very small, thin, petite women to be able to get into that final chamber.
Okay.
But what's interesting, that first chamber, the Dragon's Back chamber, Lee Berger kind of brushed that, what was found in there, off to the side. But he did mention there were lots of bones buried in sediments pasted on the side of that chamber, including baboon bones and other animal bones. Mm. So, yeah, it looks like that there was a flash flood of some sort. It washed all these bones into these chambers and literally pasted them onto the sides of the chamber. And so that's a major red flag.
Yeah, that's weird
for me right there. Yeah.
So what do you make of that? What is your initial thought when you hear that?
Well, Lee Berger basically acknowledged that. He didn't deny that there was all these bones pasted on the side of this and sediment. But he said, we were more interested, in the bones in the lower chamber. Mm-hmm. So these chambers get progressively lower and lower and lower. And so it's just common sense that based on gravity and the flow of water, you're going to get stuff, washed into one chamber after another.
Right.
So anyways, he finally gets into the last chamber, the lowest chamber called the Dinaletti chamber.
Well, he doesn't.
He does. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Well, I was just saying, so he technically never even went into that chamber.
That's a good point, right? Because he could never make it into that final one. He had to have these very small, petite women whom he hired to get down into it, to take films of it, to do the excavation.
So bizarre. Okay.
Yeah. So anyways, in this lowest chamber, they find just a hodgepodge of bones.
Okay.
And Lee Berger likes to claim that they were ritually buried, but there isn't a shred of evidence for that. In fact, they were basically jumbled up together, buried in these muddy sediments, which you'd expect from water flooding and moving a bunch of carcasses in there. And so he found 1,500 bones that were so-called hominid bones.
Okay. Were they connected in any way?
He claims that they represented 15 different individuals.
Okay.
Well, evolutionists from around the world have looked at these bones after the fact and said, no, they're not connected to each other. There's different kinds of creatures in these bones. It may be another situation where you may have a few human bones mixed up with a bunch of largely ape bones. In fact, Lee Berger said a lot of the bones were very Australopithecus-like. In other words, very chimpanzee-like. So right. Australopithecus basically is just an extinct type of chimpanzee.
Okay.
It was this huge hodgepodge of bones. They were all jumbled up, mixed together. But one thing that's important to remember is it wasn't just the so-called hominid bones that were there. There was rodent bones, there was bird bones, bones from a lot of different creatures that lived in that part of the world.
It sounds like a pretty big flood.
That were all mixed in as well. Kind of Lee Berger's main central premises, all of this was done by hominids that were nearly human, not quite, but almost, and they ritually buried these bones in there. Well, first of all, why would any human ritually bury bones in something so incredibly difficult to get to?
Right.
That's not what we see around the world.
Right.
Basically, humans that are buried in caves are buried in very accessible parts of the cave, and they're not, crawling down narrow chutes and all this and that. So, and on top of that, if you were going to see deep into a cave, you would probably need some form of light. Well, if you're going to say, oh, these were primitive humans and they knew how to make fire, they had torches, but there's no evidence whatsoever of any burn marks on the ceilings of this cave system, which is what you see in caves that were occupied by so-called archaic humans.
Right.
You see the burn marks on the ceilings where they walked in there with their torches because you've got to see where you're going. The deal breaker for me on the whole thing was the fact that Lee Berger actually had a postdoc who kind of left the fold, the Lee Berger a research group because she became so disenchanted with what they were finding. And one thing that she documented was is that there was snail marks on these, all of the bones deep in this cave. And so snails with their mouth parts will leave a distinctive trail as they feed upon a carcass and remove the final phases of flesh that are left on that, you know, during the process of decomposition. So snails are kind of like the last creatures that come in and completely clean the bones off of all the remaining flesh that's on them. And these snails only live in the light. They don't live in caves.
Okay.
Is what probably happened is a lot of creatures, you know, baboon, they've actually found baboon bones in this cave system.
Like modern baboon bones.
Right, modern baboons, you know, modern birds, modern rodents. So probably is what happened is a lot of these creatures were killed by predators and then eaten, you know, near the mouth of this cave. And then their carcasses, after they were, you know, dismembered and eaten, then decomposed, the snails came in at the very last stages of this process and cleaned off the bones and left their signature marks that their mouth parts leave on the bones. So, so these bones were actually in this chamber were actually analyzed microscopically, and they found all of these snail marks all over them. What are these bones doing with these snail marks on them deep in this cave system when these snails only live, at the very least, in the mouth of these caves where there's some light?
Well, it sounds like they were moved.
They were transported. So after the bones had been disarticulated and all the flesh removed, the final bits of it by these snails, and they were washed in probably with a flash flood or two.
Right.
And buried, you know, deep in this cave. That's why the bones are all jumbled up. They're in these muddy sediments. That's why the ones in the dragon's back chamber are all pasted on the sides of the chamber. So, I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer when you really think about it. And so Lee Berger has actually caused quite a stir in the evolutionary community. He is not well accepted by most of his peers.
Right. And so his claim is, hey, this is a new hominid species, right?
Yeah, but there's a lot of problems that that his finding is creating.
Okay.
One of them is, once again, the dating the dating issue, which we saw with Homo erectus, all these convoluted dates for fossils found around the world and how they don't match the evolutionary sequence and timeline. So Lee Berger began dating a lot of the flowstones. In the cave, he began carbon dating the bone. Actually, there's multiple types of dating systems that were used. It wasn't just one system.
Okay.
And so the age ranges then that he got on this were anywhere between 33,000 years ago to 849,000.
That's a pretty big spread.
Years ago. So that's a pretty big spread. So what does that tell you about evolutionary dating systems to begin with when you get this, you know, huge diversity?
Especially when you know they, at the very least, you have some idea that, like, hey, these were kind of all around the same time, right?
Well, what Lee Berger had hoped and what he initially proclaimed was that Homo naledi was about 2 million years old.
Okay.
And so after all of the dating estimates came in from all these diverse different types of dating, he settled on kind of a middle-of-the-road date at around, I think it was 269,000 years ago.
Okay. Which, in the evolutionary time scale, is not that long ago, right?
So that's the key problem for Berger. So 269,000 years ago is a blink of the eye in evolutionary time.
Right.
And so it doesn't really match up with the story of human evolution. For one, we have found an anatomically modern human skeleton in Morocco. The evolutionists dated at 300,000 years ago.
So older than this. Yeah.
Which would actually be older than this. And of course, the Homo erectus fossils, which are essentially just variants of humans, some of those go back to 1.9 million years ago. So
you can learn more about that in the previous episode.
Exactly. Yeah. So right off the bat, Berger's discoveries came under immense scrutiny because the dating of the specimens and the rocks around them and so forth, using multiple types of dating, came up with dates that just didn't match the evolutionary story.
Right. And I see that Nature, like the journal Nature, rejected his claims pretty handily right off the
bat. That's really interesting, because apparently Berger, in 2015, when he submitted his original paper to Nature, it was flat out rejected because of all the bad science in there. And so he ended up publishing in a low-tier journal called eLife. And there's a lot of great papers in eLife. Don't get me wrong. I'm not bashing eLife. But that's what Berger had to do, because the top scientific journals like Nature, Science, and so forth, he couldn't get his paper in those.
Okay. All right. Before we continue on, I'm going to interrupt you. For your favorite part of the episode, I'm sure, we're going to talk about the random science question of the day. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
You're ready? All right. And this is related tangentially, and then we'll get more into it later. But why are there so many false transitional forms? And when I say false, I mean things that are clearly not a transitional form that are being presented as a transitional form, or completely fake transitional forms that are being presented knowingly. Like, they know that it's fake, but they're presenting it anyway. Why does this happen?
Well, yeah, that's, we could talk about that for
another hour,
quite a long time, yeah. But let me just say this. So typically this is how it goes. So a famous, human evolutionist, a paleoanthropologist, will make a discovery. They'll find a fossil in the field. They'll hold a press conference, and they'll make extravagant claims about the fossil and how it advances the human evolution story, how it's a new hominid. And oftentimes, these end up being debunked later on. But this particular field is really reliant upon propaganda. So the careers of these guys in the field, has to be kind of sensationalized so they can keep the funds coming in and become, the rock stars that they want to be in this particular field. But oftentimes the bones will actually be, after the initial press conference and all the hype, transitional forms have been found and so on, the bones are then looked at by the scientific community, specifically, anthropologists that specialize in anatomy and the details of the bones and what they really look like. In fact, one case was presented as a supposed transitional form, and it turned out to be nothing more than a lemur.
Mm.
And that's just one example. But that's typically how it goes. You have the initial press conference, the initial discovery, all the hype surrounding that. And then later on, the finding gets debunked by real science.
Okay.
Which doesn't necessarily make it to the popular press.
Right. Okay, so you may not know the answer to this, but...
Well, let me tie this into Lee Berger, actually.
Sure.
So in the past, you would have a press conference, with the paleoanthropologist, and they would make some extravagant claims about this finding, and then it would be in the newspapers and maybe on TV. Well, let's think about the modern era now.
For real?
We have social media. Yeah. We have all these outlets on the internet to hype something up. So Lee Berger is kind of a man of the modern age, where he actually has exploited all of these modern technologies, these internet technologies, social media, and so forth, to actually promote his findings way ahead of what the actual science is saying after the fact.
Right.
And he's actually been heavily criticized by his colleagues for doing that.
Yeah.
And so actually, what's really interesting, a paper literally has just come out, and this paper is in the Journal of Human Evolution. And it was just published, I believe, this past month. And this paper has essentially some of the top leading paleoanthropologists on it as authors from all over the world, Australia, Spain, London. And the title of this paper is No Scientific Evidence. In other words, no scientific evidence that Homo naledi buried their dead and produced rock art. Because now Lieberger's most recent claims are there's rock art in the caves. Mm. And of course, this is now, they get into detail on this, how it's not rock art. Some of the it's just scratchings and lines in the rocks. But some of them are clearly just natural formations mm-hmm. in the rocks. And other ones look like animals that scratched the rock, which they have demonstrated occurs all over Africa. The animals will either in caves or outside of caves scratch rocks and leave claw marks on them. Okay. And so none of these are real art. So anyways, this paper not only gets into that, but it also gets into the fact that the cave system had been repeatedly explored before Berger got into it. And all kinds of other problems and issues are addressed in this paper. But you know what's really interesting is that I want to read a quote that was made shortly after Lieberger initially made his discovery and all of his grand proclamations. Sure. and had that 2015 eLife paper. And so this is from a 2015 Science News piece right afterwards, after Berger brought his discovery to light. And so this was in The Guardian. So this is a Science News piece in The Guardian newspaper in 2015. And the title of the science piece was "Scientist Who Found New Human Species Accused of Playing Fast and Loose with the Truth." So the problem is you have major paleoanthropologists around the world basically saying that this discovery's got major issues, major problems.
Right off the bat.
Including Tim White, who's a famous evolutionist at the time.
So you may not be able to speak for Lieberger or anybody else in this regard, but that just makes me wonder, is there an aspect of like, is this intentional? Like, do they know that they're lying? Or maybe I should be careful about that. Do they know that they're presenting like falsehoods? Do they know that they're misrepresenting things? Or is it just like they're so hyped up? Or is it like, hey, if I want to make a name for myself, I have to twist things, you know?
Yeah, I can't really speak to people's intentions and what they're thinking, you know, in their heart and their minds about what's going on here. But one thing is obvious is that Lieberger is kind of, he's going through channels to hype his discoveries. His discoveries are later after the fact being debunked as being uncredible or illogical. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what is his intent? Does Lieberger really think what he's discovering is valid? Or is he cherry picking what he's finding? Obviously, he's hiding stuff, because even in the book he wrote, it was obvious in the book that they had discovered things like other caves and things that they didn't talk about right off the bat. In fact, one of these other systems had what was called the Lacetti chamber in it, which had more so-called Homo naledi fossils in it, which Lieberger knew about at the very beginning, but he didn't reveal that until later on, after the initial Homo naledi findings that he published in the chamber we just talked about before.
Right. So there is some like,
so there's some like, there's some like, yeah, selective, yeah, intentional revealing of things that he's discovering. But yeah, just to give an example of an after the fact discovery, not only the snail mark issue on the bones that we already talked about, but the people have begun actually looking at these bones and trying to figure out, were these ape or were these human or what were these things? So one of the bones that's very distinctive are ossicle bones, and those are bones that form part of your inner ear,
okay,
your ear system, your hearing system. And they found out that these ossicle bones, this naledi assemblage of bones, were chimpanzee. In fact, other people, including Berger himself, have said a lot of the bones are Australopithecus-like or chimp-like for all practical purposes.
Right.
So But there are a few bones, not many, that they do look like they're human. And so what's going on? So maybe, you know, Africa has a lot of wild animals in it that are predatory, like lions. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just speculating, but I think that possibly a small juvenile human may have been snatched up by a lion, which happens in Africa mm-hmm. quite frequently. And they were hauled into the mouth of this cave, you know, because animals will seek kind of a place that's sheltered where they can consume their meal so the other creatures don't challenge them with their kill. So
right.
I think maybe a small juvenile human may have been killed by, say, a lion and then consumed in the mouth of this cave. But the fact of the matter is most of the bones in the cave are not human bones. They're chimp-like. Australopithecine bones or other things like rodents and birds and baboons and things like that. So the majority of the bones in these caves are animal-like. They're not human.
Okay.
But there may have been one or two, you know, humans that were
included, you know, in the jumble.
That were included in the jumble, which is interesting because Australopithecus sediba, you know, has largely been shown to be a mix of human and ape bones.
And there we have it again.
So Berger has a track record of mixing human and ape bones together and saying it's one individual. In fact, that was the case with Homo habilis, which mm-hmm. was a so-called hominid transitional form, which was eventually debunked by evolutionists themselves as being a mix of human and ape bones. And now it's widely considered to be a fictional category of hominid.
Okay.
And so sediba looks like it was the same thing, same situation, mix of human and ape bones. And it looks to me like that's probably what we're looking at here with Homo naledi. A few human bones in there, but mostly ape bones.
So what's the point, I guess? I'm trying to imagine that I'm Lee Berger. Why do I keep trying to propagate this? Why do I continue to build myself up on social media, despite the fact that, like, even my, it's not creation scientists who are saying that he's not correct. It's everyone.
Right. It's most of the evolutionary community is saying this is messed up.
So why
This recent paper that was published, as well as others that were published, have pretty well proven that. In fact, one paper was published where they actually used a machine learning algorithm and looked at the placement of all the bones in these muddy sediments. And they compared the placement of all these bones in the Dinaledi chamber to real burials around the world in other caves. And so with this machine learning algorithm, they showed that they were just randomly dumped in there.
Right.
And so, yeah, so Berger's getting hit on all fronts. So why does Berger keep pushing the narrative? Well, you have to remember in academics, especially in the field that he's in, you know, a lot of it depends on your popularity, on being, you know, having really exciting research that stimulates people.
Okay.
And so Berger literally is, his career is somewhat on the line here. He's got to keep pushing this narrative, you know, and in fact, he just recently tried to publish the papers that I just mentioned on so-called cave art in there. So he keeps coming out with these waves of papers that keep pumping up his nerve because his career is on the line. And we're talking about, you know, your salary at the university is on the line. Your funding is on the line. Berger actually gets a lot of funding, private funding, surprisingly. One is from a lady here in Dallas who's a very wealthy individual, and she funds Berger. And Berger and his workers actually occasionally come to Dallas and give lectures.
Mm.
And so, you know, your basic money supply, your career, you know, everything is kind of riding on this. And so,
got to do it. You know, it's almost desperation.
You got to make a buck. Right?
Yeah. So. It's almost desperation at this point. Okay. Well, so I think that we've kind of come to the conclusion, as has everyone else in the scientific community, that Homo naledi is just a failed attempt. It's not anything, right? Is that, would you agree? It's certainly not what he says it is.
No, it's a Homo naledi is a concoction that he's put together. You know, evolutionists have noticed and made comments about his assemblage of bones that he puts together to create a certain individual are bogus, that the bones are not matching up with each other as far as the kind of creature it is, and that they're they come from entirely different creatures, and they have no business being put together as a single creature. So evolutionists have mentioned that. I think I've actually got a quote, an evolutionary quote from a specialist in this article that I published. So I actually have an article. It's called Homo naledi, Another Failed Evolutionary Ape Man. And it's essentially just a summary of all the things that we've been talking about, excluding this. I didn't put information in there from this recent article because this was published a couple of years
ago.
Because
you can't travel to the future.
That's right. So, but actually, Dr. Tim Clary has a news article coming out kind of talking about the information that's in this new secular evolutionary paper. So be watching for that.
Yeah.
But basically most of the basic issues and facts are in this article that I did. It's a full-length feature article in our monthly magazine. So if you could put a link up to that, that would be great. Absolutely. I think that would give people
the
broad spectrum of what they need to know about this.
It's such an interesting story because it starts out like so, I don't know, Indiana Jones-like, right? And then it's just like, what is this? What is he doing? You know?
Yeah. He's trying, I think, my personal opinion, he's trying to create this mystique and this drama and this, you know, this story that's really stimulating. And he doesn't care what all the rest of his colleagues think. You know, he's kind of running this for all it's worth. And he's definitely taking advantage of social media and these modern platforms that we have with the internet. And actually the scientists in this paper that just came out actually talk about that, how Berger has exploited that and kind of jumped the gun, so to speak. So he puts these claims in these papers out there. Once again, he keeps publishing in low tier journals. The major scientific journals will not accept his work. So
So
even the secular evolutionary scientists are well aware of that side of promoting this and pushing it using modern platforms.
Okay. So I think we've kind of reached a conclusion here. Homo naledi is a concoction, and Lee Berger is just, you know, he's trying to further his career. You can't fault the man for that, but you can fault the way he goes about it, right? You know? So I just want to give you an opportunity here at the end for any of our viewers and listeners, if you have any like closing thoughts, any nuggets of wisdom that you want to share with them about this whole topic?
No, not really. I would suggest reading the article that I wrote.
Yes.
And I would actually suggest reading this article that I just mentioned in the Journal of Human Evolution, if you can get it.
Yeah, we can. Yeah. Is that behind a major paywall, I'm sure?
It is, but I was able to get access to it through a university that I'm affiliated with.
Okay, all right. So if you have university access, we'll see what we can do about that. At the very least, we'll put the name in, of the article and they can see if they can find it. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here. This has been fun. We'll do this again with some more transitional forms sometime in the future. These are very interesting because there's always like a bit of history involved with them.
Yeah, there's always an interesting story behind, you know, all of these findings and claims.
Yeah.
And not only, you know, the initial discovery, but everything that happens in the wake of that discovery when scientists come in and begin analyzing in detail the so-called findings.
Yeah.
And typically, it debunks the human evolution story. And once again, we're left with the fact that what do we really have? We have apes in the fossil record.
Which is
and we have humans. And you can say, oh, well, some of them have archaic features. Well, as we discussed in the previous episode, these archaic features, the sloping forehead, the large brow ridge, the reduced chin, we see that amongst modern humans. So they weren't really archaic at all. They were just variants of the human kind.
Just genetic diversity.
Just genetic variation. And look at the variation we see in humans.
Yeah.
You know, some people are really tall, some are really short, some have light skin, some have dark skin. Just, you know, there's a lot of variation amongst humans, but humans are humans. And
they're made in the image of God.
And they're made in the image of God, exactly. Yeah. So human evolution, basically, when you look at the data, there's apes and there's humans, and that's really all you see. The missing link is still missing, if you want to kind of a final statement on everything that also touches on this.
Okay.
We have humans and we have apes, and so far that's all we've got.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your expertise. And again, we'll do this again with some more transitional forms. These are just really fun. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. It's been good.
All right. And thank you to all of our viewers and listeners for joining us today for this second part of this little series that we've got going on. It's been a blast, and we'll do this more in the future. These kinds of things are kind of propped up in pop culture, and we want to make sure to give you the tools that you need to combat them. If you do want to see this podcast a week early, or you want to see Creation.live 2 weeks early, make sure to become a member here on YouTube or become a patron on Patreon. The links are in the description below. And also, we encourage you to like, subscribe, share with your friends and family, and we'll see you next time on the Creation Podcast.